It is holiday season, and that comes with always exhortations to spend time with your loved ones. There are a lot of good reasons for doing that. We've got one more for you. A new study out of UNC Healthcare suggests that elderly patients have better health outcomes if they spend more time with friends and family. We are joined now on the air by Dr. Timothy Platts-Mills, research specialist in geriatric medicine at UNC. He's with the Department of Emergency Medicine, and he is heading up this study, which is just coming out. I know the actual presentation is going to be this spring, right? But the findings are just beginning to come out. Dr. Platts-Mills, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks very much for having me.
So how did this study come about, and how was it undertaken?
So we've been interested in this question of what determines whether a person has pain for quite some time, and I've worked with a number of people in this area. And so I had a colleague in Denver who was collecting some new data on patients in the emergency department, and she asked if I wanted to partner with her, and so I did. And it was a fairly simple design. It's called a cross-sectional design, where basically you meet people in the emergency department, you ask about their pain, and then you ask them about some of these other factors. You could call them social determinants of health, kind of in that space. But particularly we're interested in questions about social support. So we asked, in terms of the pain experience, as is consistent with other studies in this area, older adults unfortunately have a lot of musculoskeletal pain. So the average pain score in the past month was around a 5, with kind of half of people having moderate or severe pain in the past month. And then we asked people, so tell us about what's going on at home. And we asked people, do they have people they can turn to in times of need? And if they said that they did, their pain score was quite a bit lower. So it was around a 4. If they didn't, then they had a pain score around a 6. And this is sort of consistent with what we think is going on is somebody has a pain experience like they have a back pain, and there's a biological mechanism there, like there's a pinched nerve, let's say, or there's bone-on-bone arthritis. But there's also a subjective and sort of other components to the experience of pain. And being socially isolated or being, you know, not supported by people or feeling like you're a burden to other people actually makes your pain worse.
Okay. So it sounds like the study is suggesting that people who generally spend more time with friends and family tend to have lower pain scores. Not necessarily that people might have higher pain scores and then they start spending time with friends and family and that has an impact, but that might be suggested.
Well, that's very smart of you to pick up on that, because actually, like in a cross-sectional study, you can't determine the causal relationship.
Right.
We know there's an association there, but we didn't like go in and separate people or put them together. So we don't know whether the social isolation led them to have more pain, which is kind of what we think is going on, or whether perhaps in some cases their pain made them socially isolated. So it could be either way, but we have some earlier work that was prospective longitudinal work that suggests actually the perceived social support. So whether you feel supported by colleagues and your peers, family, caregivers, that actually does have an influence on outcomes after an acute injury like a car accident. So that's an earlier study we did. So,
yeah. And I know that there have been other studies that talk about the importance of social interaction on sort of health outcomes, right? How does this fit in?
This sort of fits with that larger body of work, exactly. And so it is interesting for me to think about what are the implications of this study. So you can imagine as an emergency physician working, seeing, you know, quite a few patients per shift, It's hard to solve everybody's social problems, and certainly in an hour or two, it's hard to do that.
Right.
But on the other hand, we do know that giving pills to patients, older adults, like giving them pain medication, although that is sometimes helpful, that also has complications as well. So we know ibuprofen and other NSAIDs, that sort of category, Aleve, ibuprofen, Advil in older adults, puts them at risk for stomach bleeds and also for renal problems. Mm-hmm. And so those are dangerous. Opioids are also dangerous, partly because of the risk of addiction and overdose, but also because of they cause constipation and falls, and those can have, you know, significant consequences. So the quick solution often which is taken is an imperfect one. And so heightening awareness amongst clinicians and amongst lay people about the value of these interactions and social support is important.
So speaking with Dr. Timothy Platts-Mills again, UNC Healthcare, we're talking about this study about the importance of social interaction to reducing the pain experience of elderly patients. Are we just talking about social interaction in general, or does it matter who people are interacting with?
That's a good question. So one of the things that we kind of picked up on there, two sort of things I'll mention. One of them is that actually being around people a lot didn't appear to be as important as the perception that you feel supported. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you ask people, do you see other family members and friends on a regular basis, that actually doesn't appear to matter. But if you ask people if they feel like they have somebody they can turn to in time of need or they feel like they belong, that does matter. And so I don't know if you've read the book, The Stranger in the Woods, but I will say if you haven't, it's very interesting, and I'm not associated with the book, but I'll make a plug for it anyway.
Okay.
But I would make the point
I wish
that,
I had read it, because that would be the most impressive thing in the world. Oh, yeah, I read it twice. Yeah.
I will say there is variance in people in regard to how much company they like to have. Mm-hmm. Some people don't like to have that much company. And so it's not necessarily that every older adult needs to have somebody with them all the time, but I think the perception that to make sure they feel like they have somebody they can turn to and that they are welcome and belonging to a community, I think that's really the value. And in some cases, you know, families can do that. Hopefully families can do that. It's probably the first place you would think. But in some cases, people are socially isolated for, you know, various reasons. And so social support services can play a role. So, for example, Meals on Wheels programs, which were initially created to help feed people who didn't have access to food, the actually having somebody drive out to somebody's home and spend some time with them and heat up a meal for them and sip with them actually appears to have a lot of other impacts beyond the benefit, the nutritional benefits. So that would be an example of a social service that was helping people.
How have you seen this with individual patients that you know of, or that others that you've spoken to have sort of seen on like an individual level?
Yeah. So one of the sort of more difficult patients that I saw was an 82-year-old woman who had a spouse had passed away about 2 months ago, mm-hmm. and she came in the emergency department with low back pain. And the resident who initially saw her got some sense of her pain severity, but didn't sort of get the social background. And so when I talked to her about what was going on, she was quite tearful. And it was clear that she was really upset by it. But, you know, she had family, children in Charlotte, children in New York, nobody local, mm-hmm. and was pretty socially isolated. And I think that, you know, we talked for a long time about how she might be better connected to the community here and to her children. So sometimes we'll see cases like that where, you know, it's clear that a pill may reduce her symptoms in the short term, but there are some other things that need to happen.
It says a lot about the role of a doctor too, right? That, I mean, you think about sort of the standard impression of the doctor is you go there, you complain about something, they look at it, they diagnose it, they give you the medication that you need, and then you go. But there's so much more to that role than that.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I mean, it's a nice thing about working here in Chapel Hill. It's a fairly small community, and so people know each other pretty well. Mm-hmm. And we have outstanding clinicians sort of throughout levels of primary care and advanced specialty care. And so the extent to which clinicians can communicate with each other and link people back to their families and talk to family. I spent some time talking to family members on the phone today for a patient, and it's... So I think we live in a good community for doing those things, but of course there's always more to be done.
Yeah. So again, speaking with Dr. Timothy Platts-Mills, UNC, so now that this study is wrapping up, we know the implications of this, the importance of social interaction, the importance of feeling supported, mm-hmm. In terms of health outcomes and reducing pain. Where do we as individuals go from here? How can we take this information mm-hmm. and apply it in our lives?
Right. Well, so in terms of the layperson, I think some awareness of the need for that social support is important. I think clinicians and lay people tend to think of things as sort of binary, like, oh, my knee hurts and it's osteoarthritis and that's the problem. And if I take the pill or I get the right pill or I have the surgery, it's solved. And sometimes that's the case, but sometimes there are other things going on there. And so looking a little deeper and being open to the fact that causality is very rarely just one thing, mm-hmm. but often multiple components contributing. So having some awareness of that is good. In terms of our own work, we're interested in developing interventions that can sort of do a better job of addressing this in the emergency department on a sort of systematic level. So my colleague at Duke, Frank Keefe, has developed a number of interventions where you educate spouses about, for patients with like an osteoarthritis, let's say, you educate spouses about how best to support them in a way that sort of supports their independence. You're not trying to like keep them in bed all day and feed them food. You're trying to sort of keep them active and healthy and productive. Mm-hmm. And our own work in the emergency department, we're focusing on patient education primarily through, you know, basically directed patient education in the emergency department and then a short-term follow-up. Because even for patients who have good primary care access, it's often hard to get in to see a primary care doctor in the mm-hmm. next few days for something which is perceived to be minor, like musculoskeletal pain, but often has a lot of implications for long-term health.
And what else do people need to know about this study or just in general about this larger issue?
I think we've captured a lot of it. I will say musculoskeletal pain is really common. It's mm-hmm. The older adult population is growing. It's not going away. I think that there's a lot to be said for preventing musculoskeletal pain. So for people who are in their 40s and 50s, they're not yet older adults, but maintaining your health at that time, sort of maintaining your physical activity and muscle mass and staying healthy and active is probably a really good way to head off future musculoskeletal pain.
And if you're younger, it's the holiday season, call your mom, call your dad, call your grandparents.
Thank you. Yes, of course. If you don't get a chance to go visit them, then make a phone call.
All right. Dr. Timothy Platts-Mills, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks very much.